display in my studio.
Really?
Yeah.
Make like an altar.
It's really big. I already have altars. It's like serious junk.
Everyone has them.
It's all good.
It's all good.
It's safe.
Oh, cool. Yes.
That's okay. If you're just tuning in to K-Chung Radio, you are listening to another exciting episode of No.
No.
We have a very special guest.
Thank you.
Do you want to introduce yourself? I know you have a couple different
monikers.
Yes.
My name is Amanda Yates Garcia. I am the Oracle of Los Angeles.
Thank you so much for being here tonight.
It is my great pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
So, Amanda, how long have you been the Oracle of Los Angeles for?
You know, I think I've been officially the Oracle of Los Angeles for several years. I can't remember exactly when it happened that I became the Oracle of Los Angeles. I think basically I was doing like kind of spirit-oriented work for a long time, for probably about 4 or 5 years, leading performances and meditations and things like that. And then my work has concerned the spirit for about... for about probably like 6 years. And then before that, I had my own spiritual practice, but it wasn't like what my work was about.
Right.
But the way that I became the Oracle of Los Angeles was just sort of a fluke, and then I did a performance where I made this oracle booth that people would crawl in and see me in the booth. It
was that at Human Resources?
It was. Did you see that piece?
Native Strategies.
Yeah.
Volume 2 release.
Wow, dude, I didn't even remember that. Yeah.
I have a good memory for remembering art.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
I
can't remember anything else.
Wow, yeah. That's awesome. I bet that comes in handy.
Or sometimes people get mad because they're like, how could you remember that but not this?
Right, yeah. Yeah.
I feel bad. But it is handy sometimes. So that was the official debut.
Well, I did an Oracle booth, but I didn't really call myself the Oracle of Los Angeles. But then people
The booth was City Hall.
City Hall. The booth was City Hall. And so the ideas that I was thinking about with that piece were the idea about authority and belief systems and, you know, how we give credibility to...
The man.
The man and people in authority positions. But I was also, the booth was made out of cardboard, so it was a cardboard rendition of City Hall. And I was also thinking about the people who live, you know, only blocks away from City Hall in cardboard boxes and cardboard houses, essentially. And I was thinking about the concept of like holy fools and who we listen to in a culture. And so it was interesting because I didn't expect that people would interpret the work the way that they did. Like, I expected, because it was in a gallery context, that people would visit the Oracle as an art project. Like, I thought that they would contemplate, have a sort of aesthetical distance from the work. But it's really interesting that whenever you do spiritual work, people immediately take it literally. So they immediately either decide, yes, I believe this, and this is the oracle, and she is going to give me, you know, powerful information, insight about my life, or they immediately adopt a cynical position, like, I don't believe in this kind of shit. Which is really interesting to me, because in an art context, to say, like, oh, I don't believe in this, immediately supposes that you assume that it's meant to be
believed in,
which I didn't expect that people would think that, because normally when you go into a gallery setting, you are expecting that you should think critically about the work. And I've encountered over and over and over again with my work that people immediately assume that all of their assumptions about what, like, you know, tarot is, or about like what crystal and people are like or whatever, immediately comes in and they can't see the, like, often it's very...
Do you want a beer?
Sorry. Oh, thank you.
Do you want a beer, Evan?
Thank you, Evan.
Evan, that's so nice of you. Thank you, but how do we open?
Oh, I got you.
Oh, okay.
I've got
the open. Thank you.
Wow.
I'm still, I got
half.
Thank you.
That's very generous. Thank you, Evan. Clink.
Clink.
Cheers.
So that, I think you're right, that most people do interpret that work in a very, either, very few people I feel like have like an agnostic approach to it or something, where they're like, oh, this may or may not be like, reveal,
well,
like,
right.
Very rarely do I hear people, when talking about this work, kind of like go down the road of like believing in it with a healthy distance or something, or like just for the sake of doing it, like
yeah.
exercise. Or
yeah.
Like.
Well, I just think that the systems of belief are really interesting, and when we decide we believe something, and for example. One thing is, I've definitely found is true through the practice of being an oracle, is that if you say you're an oracle, you know, in a lot of ways it's a fiat, right? Like, you are then.
Right.
Because you say you are, but...
Like, nobody's ever asked to see your credentials.
No, nobody asked to see my credentials. As it happens, I do have some, you know? And I do, and, you know, and I also practice, you know, I have a practice as an oracle that's a job.
Can I ask you, what is an oracle?
It's like a seer, like a... well, technically an oracle is someone who communicates with the divine.
Uh-huh.
So it's someone who can, you know, communicate with whatever sort of... higher powers, or, you know, the one, the absolute, you know, the gods.
Spiritual deities,
and then they speak through they use the oracle as a vehicle.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, but I also, you know, I'm a practicing witch, I read tarot, and I, you know, I do oracular services, etc. And those are not really, you know, I don't do them in an art context. I do them privately, but I do definitely see them as an extension of my art practice, in that I see them as, you know, very intimate, purposeful performances to achieve a desired effect. And in fact, I think that art could stand with a little bit more of that in general, of like, what are we trying to do here exactly, you know, and then intimately one-on-one making it happen with people. So that's something that I am interested in.
Like, so art.
Yeah, well, yes, I guess. I mean, it depends, like...
I think through both.
Yeah, like, through what I'm doing.
And one on
through
one.
Your life.
Yeah, through my life. Yeah, I think through... Like, I would like this practice to be woven through everything that I do.
Right.
You know, every interaction that I have. I believe that, you know, that I really care about people responding to the world with more love and generosity, and really believing that other things are possible, and being able to imagine a different kind of future, or being able to imagine alternatives to what is around us. And I think that a lot of the time, you know, spiritual practice is a way of doing that, you know, and entering into the world of the spirit or the divine is a way of, you know, considering other options that might not seem rational or even achievable, but that are nevertheless, I think, essential to making life bearable a lot of the time. And beyond making life bearable, actually trying to work towards some kind of transformation, which I think also within the art world is sometimes, I think it's actually so overwhelming for people, the idea of actually transforming the world, that often we don't even go there, and people are often really defeatist about it, or like, well, that's not possible, so I'm just going to focus on shape and form or whatever and be in that dialogue, which I think is great too. But that's just not what my practice is about.
I think there's also something about like when you have like a desired like objective, then often the work is measured, and like maybe this is something you've experienced, but often the work gets measured on whether like how it fulfills that or not, which I don't think is the best way to think about things in terms of art,
right?
Because it's like too like reduced, it's too like simplified, and then if it doesn't do the thing that it's supposedly trying to do, then it's like a failure.
I know, that's so interesting, isn't it? That whole concept. I mean, on one hand, I totally get it, right? It makes perfect sense. Like the art sets up an argument, and whether or not it follows through on that argument and actually resolves it by the end of looking at it closely determines whether or not it's a success, supposedly.
Well, I feel like that's how a lot of other fields function.
Right.
That like art is more open is one of the things that it's unique about it. So I don't know. I mean, I like to like think about, I feel like sometimes like questions of aesthetics or like metaphor or how meaning's constructed or identity that kind of get lost when people have like an objective, and I think that we need to like not do that. Like it's like they lose art value, and like it becomes a conversation about like activism or pragmatics, which I think like if they can exist at the same time.
So you're saying that if art has like a specific agenda, that it can get too bogged down by that agenda, and that those sort of shades of gray and places of
I heard some crazy noise, but I think it was just the headphones.
Okay. So there's.
I think in terms of viewership.
Yeah.
Like I don't think that's the fault of the work, as it is as much of like the discourse around the work.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's really interesting because I feel like people in the art world see themselves as having a very open mind and critical point of view. But, you know, we're all human and we have our major blind spots, all of us, you know, and I think a lot of the time people in the art world have things that they immediately dismiss, you know, sort of out of hand, and then they have things that they sort of immediately accept without questioning. And yet I think it is about, I mean, to the degree that you can talk about an art world as like a total thing, as if it's, you know, it's this monolithic thing. But I think that, I forgot what I was gonna say. I was on a track and then I slipped off, but I was talking about the monolith, and what was I talking about before that?
Like the practices that are more objective or have like a clear goal outside of aesthetics or something.
Yeah, I don't know. Rewind.
Well, something that you kind of mentioned that we've been talking about a lot is like you have, there's certain aspects of what you do that you would maybe, that you don't include in art context, and other ones that you do that I'd be curious to know if you include those things in a non-art context, or like how do you balance those two aspects of like what you do?
Well, like what are you like, talking about specifically?
I guess like the dichotomy I'm saying is like spiritualism and like art.
Yeah.
And like they are like weaving in and out of everything, but then like when you
just focusing on art and life.
I'm really interested actually in like indigenous art practices, and to the extent that they can be called art, because I don't think that they, you know, that the artifacts that are made within spiritual contexts or that have a sort of use value that isn't just, you know, like it's a bowl or it's a cup or it's a hat or whatever, but it's an object that's used for a purpose.
For like a ritual.
Like ritual objects or power objects or, you know, talismans or whatever. I'm really interested in those kinds of objects. And so... yeah, I think that, you know, that's sort of my main influence and like where I'm, you know, trying to gather inspiration for my work rather than just from the tradition of, you know,
visual art,
yeah, in the Western world.
Do you mean like if outside of her art making?
Like, well, yeah, because you mentioned that, like, you said you do oracle work isn't really, like, you don't really,
certain, call it
like,
art.
Practices that don't come into, like, art context.
Well, I do think of it as art. I mean, I guess so, the question...
I guess I'm just curious, like, where those lines begin and end for you between these words, like, art and spiritualism and...
Yeah, I mean, what? It gets the question of, like,
and like
what
service.
Is art or
maybe
whatever,
you're...
but I don't know that, I mean, I think, like, is that the question? Like,
yeah,
when does something become art in my mind?
Yeah, like, what if you're giving a service, kind of, almost, like, do you call it, like, artistic service, or you call it, like, I'm totally doing art with you, like, your customer, if you're getting paid from, a reading, with your performance, like, how do you balance your performance and the reading with your...
Well, it gets into all sorts of really interesting issues, I think, that relate to, you know, exchange value and sort of aesthetical practices and contemplation, etc. Like, in the sense of, when I'm working as an oracle, like, when I'm, you know, getting paid for it, essentially, rather than doing it for free at some, like, you know, artist-run exhibition space. I don't think that I would just... Well, first of all, I think for obvious reasons, I wouldn't just say, oh, this is art, because I feel like people would not feel satisfied by that. Even if I was doing the exact same practice, and even if they got the same result, if I just said, oh, this is only art, and this isn't serious, or this is, you know, this isn't, like... Well, I think that's kind of the territory that I'm trying to circle around that I think becomes really interesting, because when you look at something from a different culture, let's say, where there is a ritual object that has a real meaning, or you do a dance, or you use a specific object in a specific way, and you invoke it with deities, and you say, this object is going to do this thing, and, you know, I think, in non-Western context, for example, it's not a, like, the object might look like art to us, but it isn't art in the sense that we think about art, like something that's there for purely aesthetic contemplation, like just to look at and talk about, and yet it's not really a designed object either, so it's not just for everyday use. And so I think that sort of blurred line of how objects get used, how human interactions take place. You know, if I act as an oracle in a gallery setting, or if I act as an oracle in like a palm reader shop on the side of the road, I could do exactly the same thing, but people interpret it in different ways. And I guess then maybe the question is, how do I interpret it, or where do I draw the line?
Yeah, or like, I guess I was partly... Well, one, I have a couple questions. Like, one thing that I was thinking about, like, as you said that I think, is it sounds a little bit like in both, like in these purely art contexts or these purely spiritual contexts, both, like, using the other word or the other label, even if you aren't saying this isn't spiritual, but even if you're saying like, oh, this palm reading is also an art performance, or if you're saying, it sounds like sometimes when you're in the art context and you're saying like, oh, this is art and
I get,
like,
paid for it,
or and it's like a spiritual, like I have these spiritual goals, or like,
yeah, and that's what I mean, like it's spirit and it's work and it's art. And I think, like, especially for performance, you know, you can't really think of it as something that you're gonna do for work, you know, but artists need to survive and artists need to live. And so I think, you know, this is a sort of creative strategy for fusing everything together. And I really feel also that, I mean, I think that the idea of art as something that heals is really taboo within the art world, although it's not taboo within the world of education or like healing or psychology. But within the art world, the idea that art is something that you use to like express your feelings or heal yourself somehow is so like verboten. It's like ugly or something. And I think I'm willing to risk it and see and just go there and like fuck all y'all if you don't like it kind of vibe, you know? Like I want to see what's in there. Not that you guys wouldn't like it, but...
No, I like it. I'm all about it, yeah.
But did I answer your question, or did I completely go... Because you're making distinction about spiritual practices and art practices.
You are interested in the distinction.
I think the thing is strong, maybe for you, because I always ask him the question, because I have two different identity. If I say, like, just only two...
Right.
For him, it's difficult is because all he's involved with art people.
What do you
like
mean?
More than like maybe like 80% of the stuff you do
probably
are art.
Yeah.
But I think for you, like for me, I have to maybe like 60% of the stuff I'm around is not art.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I mean, it's different. It's like art teaching, which is still art.
It's art, yeah. Like for her, it's like reading, and we're lucky, like we can do this art practice through, like survive with the same sort of art. Media,
mm-hmm.
But if there is like a painter, she's just like a waitress. Like during the day, she paints in her studio. At night, she goes to waiting the table.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like maybe a little bit separate.
So you're talking about how for many artists they have to divide their means of sustaining themselves. Like, for example, earning money from their practice, or they see them as very isolated things. And then there's also a possibility of fusing. Well, I think when we say one thing is art and then everything else isn't, like, I don't want that.
Right.
I want all of it to be art all the time for everyone,
right.
You know? And that's what I'm interested in. I just think I want to live in that kind of world, and I want to seduce other people into living into that kind of world with
right.
me.
Do you worry that it gets watered down, and like if everything's like, that like it loses potency?
That art does.
Yeah, if it's that wide, or do you think it gets more power?
I had the idea. I'm not sure how you think about philosophy, like, but now I think, like, when you talk about philosophy at school, I think people think about, like, religious, sort of. I don't know if you choose, when you did you post something saying you want to go to philosophy?
No, I originally, when I went to college, I declared my major as philosophy, but I rejected it.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, when I was in college, I have the same feeling of you, like, I wanted to, like, oh, the White House needs to have philosophy class.
Yeah.
Everybody needs to know, like, and then the world will be better.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of like, what are you thinking about art?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think maybe if what I'm thinking is kind of like what you're thinking, like if people, everybody just love art, this maybe like with big capital ART, like, and then people will be, oh, so happy.
Well, I don't think, yeah, I mean, I don't think that what I'm trying to do is get everybody to love art, like, although I do feel like that has definitely been, like, when I was younger, that was definitely a motivation, like, oh, if only art were just more valued and respected and was a part of everybody's lives, that, you know, things would be so much better. But I don't think that that's really my project. I think what I'm trying to do, like, for example, when I work with people one-on-one, is to take them with me into another way of seeing reality that shifts reality into this spooky, spirity, topsy-turvy, dreamlike, infinite space that they become agents in and can play with, and that then they can come back and bring that out into the world. That's my goal. So just doing that one by one, and specifically I do it mostly with women because they're really the ones who are interested, but I also feel like they're the ones who most, I won't say most often, but I often do find that women are attracted and drawn to that kind of work and yet feel like embarrassed or that somehow it's not treated as significant or that their interest in it is like is irrational and a waste of time. And I don't think it is. I think it's an extremely valuable and rewarding way to spend your time. And one of the ways I know that is because it is for me. So I don't feel like anybody gets to come along and say that that's irrational. Or like, for example, you know, like astrology gets a really bad rap, and people, but often by people who really know nothing about astrology, like they know as much about astrology as I know about quantum physics, which is very little, but they come in and feel like perfectly entitled to criticize it and criticize people who are interested in it. And I think that it really gets at a complete misunderstanding about what people are actually doing when they're interested in astrology, or what they're actually doing when they're interested in crystals. And I think that it gets to this idea that, like, that is sort of similar to the way that sociologists or early anthropologists came to, you know, South America or something, and came in and they were like, oh, look at these shamans practicing this silly witch doctor stuff. Like, you know, they're sucking worms out of people's bellies, and but really the worm was inside their mouth the whole time. And we're going to debunk this, and we're going to show everybody that there is a trick in this and that it's not real. In the same way that people might say, like, oh, we're going to show you or prove to you that there's no way that the stars could influence what you're doing. But the thing is, that's not the point of what the shamans were doing. It, like, everybody knew that that was a trick, but it was about everybody coming together, everybody working towards a common goal, about having that kind of attention of somebody within the community who's considered being an expert, like working with you, you know, to heal your ailments. And perhaps there are more effective ways of, you know, for example, getting rid of a stomach flu. But I don't think that's all that was going on there. And I don't think that when people make their decisions based on, like, I don't think that when somebody reads their, you know, horoscope, that they're really basing all of their choices in their life on that. I think that something else is going on there, and that it's a way of connecting to something deeper for them. And I think that that's valuable and interesting, and I want to know more about why they do that and what they're thinking, instead of just instantly saying, oh, they're, you know, irrational and they're not doing something that's valuable to the world.
Even, like, to the least spiritual person, do you have anybody, like, just can't go there?
Well, yeah, but they don't come to visit me. You know, they don't. If somebody's like, I don't believe in this, you know, witch tarot crap, then they're probably not gonna come visit me.
Obviously, like, you talked about that a fair amount. So, like, how do you experience that kind of negative feedback? Like, what? When do you? Is it like you're? You kind of know that it exists, but you don't experience it firsthand?
No, you know, the way that I experience it is, you know, most people are polite, so they're not going to, like, be like, I don't believe in this stupid shit.
You're doing all this fake shit. Nothing's going to happen.
I know. Nobody says that. They just, they, you know, they can just roll their eyes or be kind of dismissive, or like be like, yeah, yeah, okay.
Oh.
Yeah, totally like that. And it's kind of frustrating because I feel like they, I feel like if it were something else, like,
it would be really rude.
I feel like if it were something, if it weren't about spirituality, I feel like, especially in the art world, people would, like, let's say it was about, like, truck stop culture or something, or like, you know, something.
We're like macadamia nuts.
Yeah, then people will be like, okay, I'm gonna sit with this and think about this. Yeah. I mean, because people do way more absurd stuff than macadamia nuts. but because I just feel like spirituality is so loaded in our world, you know? And
you mean like so much.
It's so loaded.
It's
like
really charged. Like it carries a lot of like cultural and historic baggage with it. People like think about all these things. Like, and I think especially in the art world, it's like it's really only the last like 100 years that art has been more or less like not
spiritual,
like not like exclusively spiritual,
right? Yeah, I mean, and there are a lot of contemporary artists who are, you know, who do work that is very spiritual, even within the last 100 years. But I feel like they have to be so careful about the way that they frame it.
Yeah, and I guess I was partly referring to like a time when the church would be sponsoring
right
the majority of contemporary art production.
And it's interesting that you bring that up, because that was also a time when artists weren't these kind of like rock stars.
Yeah.
You know, they were just like artisans who were commissioning.
What's
you
the
know.
Age?
But like
14th century, you're talking about?
Yeah, like with the Renaissance dudes, they were kind of rock stars, weren't they?
Yeah, they were, but. I mean, I don't know that history well enough to say completely, but like, I think that, let's say, for example, would a Medici's daughter be allowed to date Michelangelo? Would she be allowed to marry him? And I think that kind of fundamentally speaks to, like, they might have thought, oh, this guy's cool and we can give him a lot of credibility and yeah, he can come to our parties, but he's not like rock stars today where, you know, the...
But like, would Obama's daughter marry like a rock star today?
She would marry an artist.
I guess you're right, yeah. She totally could.
She totally could marry like some fancy artist.
Right.
Like showing with whatever big shot gallery, like, you know.
Good point, yeah.
Yeah, and Obama can't say anything.
Well, it would give her credibility, right?
Give her a lot of street cred.
It would. It would. It would make her seem smart if she dated an artist.
Yeah, or like use culturally relevant.
Yeah, exactly. Like she knew something that other people didn't know. But what she doesn't know is that artists are just like everybody else.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Wait, what's happening? Why do we brought up the rock star? I forgot.
I don't know. What sign are you?
I'm a Scorpio. Actually, that's another kind of reason. I mean, I'm a Scorpio and I have 5 planets in Scorpio, so.
Whoa, big time.
I know. So much Scorpio, so much work to do, and so much like.
Is that a big Scorpio thing? Is you have a lot of work to do?
Yeah, Scorpios really get the short end of the stick. They always have to do a lot of deep work, and things are often, you know, challenging for them. They're always having to overcome major obstacles, and also like they're sort of obsessed with death often. Or
are you obsessed with death?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's part of why I'm interested in spirituality. Like, I can't believe that we're all gonna die one day, and that everybody's just walking around like as if they don't
just
know that. Well, like nobody's talking about it. Like, every person who ever lived before us is dead now, and nobody's like, "Whoa, that's crazy!" Like,
but it seems all right to me. Like, I don't know. I don't want to be around 200 years from now.
Really?
No, like. People
yeah, he doesn't. I want.
People like, get, like, I don't want to be old.
No, you wouldn't want to be old. You'd want to have, like, everlasting youth.
I guess it's also, like, just, I'm just taking my turn, and then somebody else is going to take their turn after me.
Well, you've got a great attitude. You're probably more spiritually enlightened. I mean, I wouldn't say that. I mean, I've done, like, a lot of shamanic work that deals with what's called psychopomp work, which is,
It sounds funny.
I know, it is a funny word. Psychopomp. Which is about like communicating with the dead and stuff. and going into the realms of the afterlife and everything. And I've had a lot of, you know, trance states that I feel like have sent me into where I think, you know, what I think is going to happen when we die. But that doesn't change the fact that it just is really important to me. It's just really important to me that we're all going to die. Like, I do think about it a lot, and I do think, and I rationalize that it's because I'm a Scorpio. What about you?
Who doesn't rationalize that? What sign? What do you think doesn't rationalize?
I don't know.
What sign are you, John?
I'm a Sagittarius.
Well, see, there you go. It's Sagittarians.
Doesn't.
Sagittarians doesn't. Don't think about it.
I'm a Sagittarius, and I forget. I think my moon is in Sagittarius, and then my sun is in Leo or something like that.
Well, you do look like a Sagittarius, and with that beard and blonde hair, you do. Leo.
Juan's Leo.
I'm a Leo.
You're a Leo too. Nice.
His son is Sagittarius. I think your moon is Leo.
Oh, lucky.
I think.
Your sun is Sagittarius, and his moon is in Leo.
I think his moon is in Leo.
My moon's in Leo too.
I never believed in astrology until I realized that everybody that I've dated, my, like, has been a Libra, and everybody that's been, like, my best friend my entire life has been a Leo.
I mean, that's gotta be beyond coincidence.
Yeah, I was like, okay, maybe there's a little something here, but I still keep a healthy skepticism.
And I think you should, because, I mean, it's completely irrational that astrology could work, and
until you hear that, like,
I know, but the point is, like, there's so many times when I've seen that it does. Right. There's plenty of times when I've seen that. Like, of course, we've all read our, like, sun sign, like, astrology forecasts, and it's been completely wrong.
Right.
But I don't think that's what's the most interesting thing about astrology. I think the most interesting thing about astrology is actually the way that it deals with the ideas of what each sign represents and how they work in relation to, like, other constellations. And to me, that's really fascinating. And it's really more, like, the more in-depth you go, the more interesting it is about looking at how the different aspects of your chart relate to one another.
What's your thought about, like, the 13th sign?
Yeah, what does that mean about that?
No, what do you mean?
Like, I feel like 2 years ago or something, there was, like, a lot of hubbub about, like, a 13th sign.
Yeah, there was, like people say there's 13th.
Yeah, it's between
signs.
Sagittarius and Capricorn or something. I'm not it, but it's, like,
is it because of the that little microplanet they discovered?
Really?
I don't know.
I've heard of, like, the 13th sign, but I didn't read.
No, I don't know. I mean, I don't practice astrology within my oracle business. It's just something that I'm interested in. So I wouldn't ever say that I'm, like, an authority on astrology.
It's called Ophiuchus, or Ophiuchus? Ophiuchus.
Ophiuchus.
It's the 13th zodiac sign. The idea appears to have originated in the 1970s. Yeah, I mean, I don't want to get too into this. So.
No, I want to know more about this.
Okay, I'll read it. Okay, histories. Ophiuchus and some of the fixed stars in it were sometimes used by some astrologers in antiquity as extra zodiacal indicators, i.e. astrologically significant celestial phenomenon lying outside the 12 sign zodiac proper. The constellation is described in the astrological poem of Marcus Manilius, the Astronomica, which is dated to around 10 AD. The poem describes how, colon, Ophiuchus holds apart the serpent, which with its mighty spirals and twisted body encircles his own.
so that he may unite the knots and back the winds in loops. But bending its supple neck, the serpent looks back and returns, and the other's hands slide over the loosened coils. The struggle will last forever, since they wage it on level terms with equal powers.
Wow, that just blew my mind. What do you think the knots are? I think they're tesseracts.
I don't know.
Like a flippy, trippy, dimensional object.
Parallax?
Yeah, like a thing, like it's a shape that folds in on itself and then always keeps going. It's, I think, the way that you shift between dimensions. At least it is in...
Wow, that's good to know.
Yeah, right? Wait, so maybe he rolls that. That's why he's slipping in and out, this Ophisius guy.
It's like, you fold, right?
Yeah, well, did you ever read A Wrinkle in Time?
Yeah.
They talk about tesseracts. She describes it as someone holding a piece of string.
Right.
Like, this is, a string is time, and you're holding a string, you know, taut in front of you, so that there's like a foot and a half in front of you. And there's an ant crawling along the string from your left hand to your right hand. And a tesseract goes like this, so it moves their hands together so that they're now close, and then the ant continues walking on the string, so it folds time, so there's this loop here. But I think that a tesseract, you can find pictures of tesseract shapes on the internet as like GIFs, like they go, like they fold in on one another, but I'm not sure how that deals with the cosmic snake. But I do think that generally when snakes appear, they are talking about immortality and the continuity of the universe. And, you know, snakes are often eating their own tails and wriggling around and are in constant motion. And I think that often when snakes appear in mythology, that they're trying to get us to see something that would completely fucking blow our minds and probably make it impossible for us to live if we noticed. But what about you guys? Do you consider yourself spiritual people?
I consider myself agnostic. Like, I definitely think it's possible that there's, like, yeah, deities larger than ourselves that we can't comprehend, but I also don't feel like I can really, like, get behind any of those ideas enough to really, like, do, like, yeah, it's like this.
Yeah.
It's astrology, it's right. No opinion, you know? So I'm kind of like, yeah, maybe. Maybe.
Yeah.
What about you,
Vaughn? Yeah, I think to me, it's more like superstitious on my own.
That you're superstitious?
Yeah. I'm like, everything is about, I'm looking for my husband all based on astrology and like...
Right, you're so using astrology everything. To look for your husband?
Yeah, and like, inventive, like small spiritual stuff. I invented myself.
Uh-huh. That's like the best kind.
Yeah.
Like, it's a direct relationship. I mean, that's the ultimate goal, right, is mysticism, which is the direct relationship between you and whatever the divinity is, which is not separate from us anyway, without an intermediary. That's the ultimate goal, right, for all spiritual
really?
Traditions.
Yeah.
So you're doing it intuitively.
I'm doing it.
That sounds cool how you described it.
I know, it sounds like, whoa, I don't know. I'm like doing it intuitively, but I feel like everything to me, kind of I need to study, like spend time on, like, I have this like time thing. I feel like I really need to focus on something to actually be something, like become spiritual. But that's, I don't think that is, because I think, you know, it's like a contradictory, I'm already inventing little things, like on my own, but on the other side, I don't think these things I invented are real.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think if I spend time actually studying, that will become true.
Yeah.
Like if you're like certified.
Right. Yeah.
Well, you can't really get it certified in magical practices, but yes, I see what you're saying. That like, and I think it's really interesting that a lot of the time, like especially with magic, for example, that people get very caught up in doing everything exactly right and in exactly the right order, and that's encouraged greatly by many occultists throughout time, like people like Aleister Crowley, for example. But I think that's a trick, because it's really about saying like, oh, you need to do this in a certain way to get this certain result, and I'm the one who knows the way, and you're probably fucking it up. So that's a way of like making yourself powerful, and that's why they have all these like degrees of initiation, and you know, you have to go through this very specific hierarchy, which I get, and you know, that's got its own, you know, value. But I think the thing though is about spiritual practices in terms of like, or like magical practices in terms of whether or not they work. That is so much down to the clarity of your intention and the true authenticity of the moment in which you do the work, and that is so difficult to control, and it really isn't about what steps you take. It's about getting to a certain state in your mind, and it has to be in perfect balance. And that's why it's definitely very difficult to achieve that kind of magical charge, and you can't really guarantee that it's going to happen every time, because it's really about you know, finding this sort of exact right balance of kind of no mind but clear intention, which is obviously a paradox, right? Having a very clear intention but also having it not be attached to your ego, because that's when your ego sabotages the work by doubting that it will happen, or
why does your ego do that, do you think?
Well, because I think that our egos are have evolved in order to constantly be scanning the world for problems, right? So as soon as we start thinking about a desire that we have, we immediately start thinking about what will happen if we get it and how great it will be, and what will happen if we don't get it, and that we probably won't get it because we want it and our parents fucked us up or whatever, like, or like we always make mistakes, or all of the things that we can tell each other, ourselves, about why we won't get the thing that we want. And so when you're practicing magic, what you're really trying to do is get to a state where you can harness the sort of power of your desire without actually desiring the thing. Because as soon as you desire it consciously, you start messing it up. Like your mind starts playing tricks on you. But it's also not just about that. Like, I also think it's about the sort of clarity of purpose with the sort of archetypal energy that you're working with, or the archetypal being that you're working with. And I think sometimes they choose to grant you favors and sometimes they don't. And I think also that you're not working in a complete vacuum, right? So you're working in a world that's actively working against you. Like there's a lot of other powerful magic out there. Like capitalism has powerful magic and it's trying to fuck you up.
Whoa. I think I don't really totally get what you mean, but I think this whole thing, yeah, like just a lot of things trying to fuck me up, and then just too attached, like just absorb.
Yeah. Well, then what you need to start working on, from a perspective like of a magical practitioner, what you would need to start working on would be sort of...
I don't really practice. I don't practice anything.
Well, I mean,
from the perspective of somebody.
No, I'm saying that you might want to take yourself out for a little while. Take yourself out and be like, okay, I'm going to give myself a certain amount of time to just work on sort of building up my psychical self-defense, which would mean really building up a sense of groundedness within yourself. So that you, essentially you're like building your personal immunity, and that's really difficult to do when you're also striving to achieve a bunch of other things,
right?
You know, so, you know, like giving yourself a set amount of time where you don't have to constantly be like planning a show or like updating your website or whatever, but just saying, okay, for this set amount of time, like even if it's just a month, I'm just fully going to focus on finding my state of balance. And if that just means like taking hikes and going to yoga classes, or if that means going roller skating or like hanging out with your friends or whatever, then that's, you know, that's the most important thing to me.
But you don't, do you think this happens to everybody? I don't think so. It's somebody get absorbed more.
Well, you know, I think it really has to do with, I kind of think of us all kind of like plants. You know, some plants thrive in the desert. Some plants, if you put them in the desert, they will die immediately, right? And I feel like we live in a certain society that is a very specific ecosystem. And if you put a plant in that ecosystem that really isn't designed for that ecosystem, it's going to struggle. And I think most of us struggle within this ecosystem. I think most of the people that I know are not indigenous to this ecosystem and find it really exhausting and frustrating, difficult to deal with. But they're like working with it, you know, like you have plants in your garden that aren't from here. They're probably from like Timbuktu or whatever. And they're like, okay, I'm doing what I can within this environment, but they're not thriving because it's not the right environment for them. So, you know, I think I would give yourself a break in terms of like, if you're not responding to this environment, maybe, I think one of the main problems with our culture is that we think it's all about us. Like we think, oh, if I'm not responding to this environment, then it's because there's something wrong with me. Like, then it's because I'm not working hard enough, or I'm lazy, or I'm not a talented enough artist, or, you know, I don't have enough money to function in this environment. And, you know, like there are other people that do, and obviously like I just need to work harder, or I need to do better or whatever. And I think that that is really problematic and dangerous, because then it doesn't make us kind of think, well, about the rest of the world and how it's sort of conspiring. It's not for you, you know, it's like it's not working in your favor, and you're sort of placed in this field that's difficult, and then it's sort of presented as if it's all your responsibility. You know, like my friend and I were just talking about this actually on Facebook, which is like the, you know, public forum of the day, but which we were talking about that, you know, Althusser and his theory of interpolation, which I had forgotten, but which is basically about exactly that idea about like fields that we're born into our culture, and we don't get to decide how it works, right? We're thrust in, and whether or not it works for us, we're caught in it. You know, we don't have a choice to say, oh, I don't want to be in this culture, or this doesn't work for me. And yet we sort of think that it's really up to us to, you know, make things happen the way that we want them to. And partially magic is about making, you know, fulfilling your desire, right? It's about making things happen materially under the direction of your will. But magic is also about love, and I think it's about bringing more love into the world. And if you were living in a place where there wasn't so much pressure on you to constantly be the most amazing person ever and make the most money and be the most successful artist, and then you wouldn't care. Like you wouldn't be like, oh, I'm bad at time management, you know? Like you'd be like,
You'd just be.
You'd just enjoy yourself. But you're not in that world. So, I mean, I guess the question then is, well, what are you going to do about it?
Right. Are you going to try to get into that world? Or do you find something that it's like you, yeah.
I mean, that's the hard question, right?
It is.
Like, what do you think?
I don't know. I mean, I think it's a little bit of a balance. Like, you get into a headspace where you, like, maybe you, if there's an, if you're in an environment where you feel like that's constantly being asked of you, and no matter what you do, then it's not going to change.
Right.
I would say take yourself out of that environment. But I feel like in most situations, it's somewhere in the middle is actually really good place mm-hmm. to be, where, like, you're doing things that you like to be doing, and you can be content with doing them. You know, it's not too demanding, but it's also not... I don't know, I feel like I would want some challenge, you know, if I didn't have... Like, if I lived, like, off the grid in, like, Humboldt or something, yeah. all I did was, like... grow weed.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think I would be very satisfied.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm much more frequently content in my current lifestyle.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. Like, I think it's not that, like, we should say, oh, everything's wrong with society and there's nothing wrong with me. And, you know, like, so I should just sort of drop out and, like, go live on a pot farm in Humboldt. But... like, because there is something about, you know, pushing yourself and rising to the challenge and, like, you know.
And, like, I like to go dancing.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I don't yeah. know how many nightclubs are, like, up there.
Sure, and we like to, like, go to the doctor when we're sick.
Yeah.
Or, like, and have that.
Do radio shows with my friends.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I'm sure there's some radio station out there, but probably not as many of my friends.
Right, I know. That's what keeps me here, too. All yeah. my friends, the community. Yeah, but that's, I think that also kind of gets to an important thing about my work and the idea for, I call it magic, but I think about the thing that I'm trying to do is about that state of being where it feels like, I feel like magic is about a state of play, like entering into a state of play.
Like play, having fun.
Yeah, like like what if you could be in that state?
Right.
Like imagination.
Always. Yeah.
Oh my god. Do you know, I'm going to tell everybody my dream.
Okay. Maybe this is, we'll end on this.
Yeah, we'll end on your dream.
My dream is to play forever.
That's my dream too. That's a great dream.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, you too.
But I think that's what, I mean, I think that fundamentally is kind of what art is about, right?
Yeah. I think so. For me, at least.
Yeah, I think it's about play.
Oh,
all right,
thank you
solved
so much.
It.
Thank you so much for coming by.
Thank you so much for having me. That was so fun.
Yeah, so nice
and
to meet
let's
you.
Plug your show. People can tune in to The Oracle
Hour every other Sunday at 4 p.m. And you can also visit me at my website at www.oracleoflosangeles.com. And I also have an artist website, but it's really old and it hasn't been updated, and it probably won't give you that great of an idea of what I'm doing. But if you want to look at it, you can. It's at AmandaYatesGarcia@gmail.com. No. That is my email address, in case you're wondering. But no, AmandaYatesGarcia.com. Yeah.
All right.
Thanks, you guys. That was fun.
Yeah.